Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
Better Mansfield Bakes, folks. A better you, a better me, a better Trinidad and Tobago. Our guest has finally joined us. Her name is Stacey Hines. Stacey Hines. I know some of y'all, well, the other Hines that people don't like to hear about is not spelled that way. Her Hines is H-I-N-E-S. All right, Stacey Hines. She's the CEO and founder of Epic Transformation Limited. Stacey is a tech sector leader with over 20 years of experience. Her commitment to women in leadership and in the industry is evidence in her being appointed as the first Jamaican female IT fellow by the Chartered Institute of IT Professionals in the UK. She's very big in IT and women's leadership. She's a business and leadership transformation strategist. Stacey recently founded Epic Transformation, a workforce transformation consulting company. Her passion project is hosting her podcast, The Balanced Lady Boss Show, where she serves women with tools for bossing the boardroom, bedroom, and their bliss. Stacey is a single mother and a full-time caregiver of three children, right? She is published author, who also writes ebooks and articles on leadership and digital transformation. Her favorite works include her personal photo memoir, 5-Year Love Affair, and a deck of daily intention cards to support mental wellness and adults and children. We welcome right now Stacey Hines. Good afternoon to you, Miss Hines.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. And thanks for that, reading that great intro.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, the greatness is on you. It's your intro, your bio. Beautiful. Well done. Well done. So, Stacey, so you're from Jamaica, yes?
I am from Jamaica. That is correct. Nice, but I definitely have my Trinidadian connections. So okay. I'm so happy to be having this conversation today.
Nice. Beautiful. Well, what part of Jamaica did you grow up? Yeah, you still in Jamaica that you grew up. Tell us about your beginnings as a child growing up in Jamaica.
Yeah, I actually grew up in an area called Mountain View, Jamaica. Mm-hmm. It's in Kingston. And I would say I grew up with my grandparents and my mom, as I am a product of a teen pregnancy.
Okay,
and
okay.
So I had one of those, you know, the big family homes kind of upbringing, which was really great and served me, I think, very well in establishing my values very early on, you know, mm-hmm. what was important to me, and family is a huge component of that.
Yeah.
However, my dad was American, and so I migrated when I was 9 years old.
Okay.
And lived away for most of my life, back and forth a bit. Did some high school in Jamaica while I was doing high school in the U.S. And then once it was university, I kind of stayed away for a little while. Mm-hmm. And through work, in particular my technology work, I just lived and traveled in a few places with my children, to their probably dismay. So I lived in the U.S. in a couple of states, and I also lived in Canada for a bit. And I've traveled, I would say, pretty worldwide through my tech career, where I focused a lot on bringing software to companies. Mm-hmm. So I think my career path and my foundation really helped me to explore a lot of the world already.
Nice. So you speak a lot about your foundation, or even though, I mean, your father from the States. So did your mother go with you when you migrated, or you just went there with him?
No. It was just me. Right. It was just me. And so I lived with my dad for this, I would consider, the second part of my formative years. Mm-hmm. So all through the latter part of high school and through university, certainly. And I'm very close with my father. So right. I think that also helped me with just appreciating what I could create as a woman in tech, because mm-hmm. He was my first exposure to that.
Right.
And so I think, I would say I had a very connected family in the Caribbean sense, where some people on the island and some people mm-hmm. Living in the diaspora, you know. Yeah.
So he was still allowed to be he was still a part of your life, even though you're a teen and you were living in Jamaica. He would call, you always still have correspondence, you know.
Right. I mean, by then I was with him.
Oh, okay.
Is what
okay.
I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you're nine years old. Yes, that's nine. 9 years old is when right. you went to live with your father. You know, very interesting. Because I always try to make, you know, we always hear about certain circumstances, the broken home and that kind of thing. And people like yourself that still become a success is, you know, an institute to that just because your environment, you do not have to be the product of your environment, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad you raised that point, because mm-hmm. the truth of the matter is at every stage in life, there is some brokenness, mm-hmm. right? When we're young, we might experience a broken home, or we might experience challenges with religious affiliation. So there is mm-hmm. broken spirituality. You may have challenges when you're at school and your experience with teachers. So there's that broken, the feeling of that broken educational support system. And when you get into adulthood now, you have similar challenges as an adult. You know, your relationships fall apart, with the relationships with your family mm-hmm. or relationships with your love partner, spouse, whatever, relationships with your own children, you know, at work. And so I think as human beings, we just experience a lot of that brokenness. Mm-hmm. And the way that I like to look at it, or the lens that I like to look at it through now, after doing all this work on myself, is you know, that the pain or change in life is inevitable, but the suffering that you undertake with that is optional, right? So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And even though you were the product also of a teen pregnancy, well, you did not you broke the cycle. I mean, I wouldn't actually, well, what age when you had your first child? But obviously you're being there with your father, he would have pushed, you know, well, education, and think you would have gone to school, high school, university, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think on both sides. Mm-hmm. I think because I was able to be raised with my grandparents and my aunt and uncles, I think just even from a Jamaica perspective, I think I was exposed very early on to, mm-hmm. you know, what are foundational things that we need to make sure we have in place to support our future greatness. So university, as an example, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a first generation university graduate,
right.
and that's something to be really, like, my grandmother still today, God bless her, she's still alive. She still, you know, tells me when she sees me on the news, or when she sees a newspaper article, she'll call me and tell me how proud of me she is, right, you know? Yeah. So you kind of get those values, at least I did, you get those values very early on. And sometimes persons may not necessarily be getting it from the home, regardless of how you came about, right? You may not be getting it from home, from your parents, but there is always something available to you that is showing you a path that is about values and living with integrity and choosing to learn and to be a continuous learner. I think those values are things that are just basic, and they're around us. Where I think the important parenting comes in, or is foundational on either side, whether mother or father, whoever it is you're raised with, is the choices that you make mm. as you are looking to leverage the different types of foundational things.
Yeah.
You know, like, are you going to make the choice of going to traditional school and university, or maybe you want to get certified and take short courses because that's better for you? You know, those are the type of things that I think parental support help with as you're developing, and certainly as you're trying to determine what you're going to do with your life, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And of course, it was very, very nice to hear about your aunts and grandmother. You know, we have a saying, I don't know if it's a Caribbean saying, but we have a saying here in Trinidad, it takes a village to raise a child, right? And of course, the nuclear family was very, very important. You know, there are a lot of young people, they don't have that now. It's just single parent mother, or two parents, or somebody, nobody has time for any, but that nuclear family thing, especially in our, you know, the black race, it's not a thing, you know, but how important you would think that was in your upbringing was very important, you know?
Yes. And it's funny when you talk about the village, and it is a Caribbean saying for sure, maybe even African.
Yeah.
Because I think even for me with my three children, because I'm actually divorced.
Right, okay.
I've been divorced for, I think it's 10 years now. Well, it's been a minute, or almost 10 years. When you talk about the village and rallying that village to support you as a single mother, it's so important. And sometimes the village is not your family. Sometimes the village is your next door neighbor or the person at church, depending on what your spiritual affiliation is. You know, sometimes it's a girlfriend's group. Like my girlfriend's group is really strong. You know, that's a part of my village. And then you need your village. You need different villages for different things. It's depending on the mission.
Right.
You might need a different village, you know?
That's nice, yeah, man. Everybody needs somebody, and that's up like support. Support is very important. So when we get together with people, it's good to have people to support you, not just people to call and gossip or to lime and hang out with, you know? The support is very, very important, you know? Yeah, man. So, of course, you getting into tech. Tell us about you getting into that tech and IT. You know, it's a woman... I mean, no, of course, you see women going into all aspects of occupation. I don't think there's any occupation that a woman cannot do. But, of course, maybe in your time, was it a little taboo for a woman to go into tech?
You know what is interesting about that? At the time when I was taking on technology, I mean, I was really very fueled by the experience with my dad. So my dad was in tech. Mm-hmm. He used to work on Wall Street as a systems operator.
Okay.
Long time. And I would go to work with him at nights sometimes. And I was just fascinated by the machines, and I didn't know what he was doing, but I was just fascinated by the whole thing.
Right, yeah.
And I think there was a lot of, I would call it naivete. I was very naive when I was in university. I mean, I started university when I was 16.
Okay.
Still, you know, I think figuring out who I was, you know,
that university at 16. Wow,
and so, you know, when I decided to do technology, it was very much driven by my father. And as you can imagine, while I was doing my degree, that's when the internet started to get exposed. Nothing like what it is now. But Windows was becoming a thing, and it was pretty, you know, pretty early on. And for me, it was just thinking things were cool. It was more about the fascination, and not so much, you know, am I gonna make money from this, you know, is this taboo. I don't even think I noticed that I was probably two women out of 50 men in a class. I didn't notice that. You know, and so when I talk about being naive, I think that's where I would say that I was a bit naive. And that I think actually helped me, because now when I'm working with my different clients, my executive coaching clients, or even young girls who are looking at a career in STEM, the entire conversation is about the misogyny and unconscious bias and the struggles that women have. And because I didn't have those perspectives in my mind, I just never thought I had any barriers. I was just doing me.
That's right.
Not saying that it's not good to have the awareness.
Yeah, but you had your blinders on. You had your blinders
my
on.
My blinders were on.
Yes.
Yeah, my blinders were on. And so I may have been at the effect of unconscious bias or inequity. I may have been at the effect of it, but I didn't
recognize it.
I didn't know.
Wow.
And so for me, it was really more about just striving and going after the next thing. Like, what is the next problem I can solve? It became more of what is the next thing I can do to make sure I can take care of my family? You know, you got kids and husband and all these things. So that was a lot of my focus. I would say that now, being on the other side where I'm actually helping women to overcome their challenges and helping girls to think about what they have to do to navigate the space, I think it's good to be aware. And at the same time, while you have that awareness, you put on some blinders. You stay very focused on what it is that you want to create, because otherwise you're going to get stuck focusing on all the problems, and you're only going to attract more of those problems.
Yeah, man. Well said, right? Well said. Put your blinders on, ladies and gents. Put your blinders on. Now, you've worked in Canada, you've worked in the US, worked in Jamaica. You know, everywhere you go, you tend to have a different type of, it's a different environment, a different work ethic, different type of culture that you're dealing with. What are some of the things you've had to overcome working in these three different environments?
Wow, that's a good question. I think the main thing that I would say has helped me to elevate certainly myself and my career path since moving back to Jamaica, it's like 9 years now, and even in the work that I'm doing with others, it's really that mindset. Mm-hmm. I know that people talk about mindset like all the time, and it's almost like a buzzword-ish, you know, it's not really, it's almost like you kind of know people are going to say that, but I cannot underscore, emphasize, highlight how knowing yourself, that self-awareness and self-knowledge, regardless of where somebody takes me up now, if somebody were to take me up out of Jamaica, drop me over in India, drop me over in Africa, Asia. That's the one skill, because it is learned. That's the one skill that I am sure can help me to navigate any water. And it's not that you don't have challenges and that, you know, the life things go away. No, it's just that you have a foundational set of thoughts that can help you to manage whatever life brings your way. And you just kind of know where to go back to. You know where to go back to. You know what to lean into. You know how to check yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's half of the problem, is that we're not checking ourselves. You know, we're facing life every day, because life is going to always be coming at you. Right? And it's like we're facing life and we can sit down and be like, oh my gosh, all these things are happening to me. You know, this thing is happening to me, and that is happening to me, and so it's preventing me from creating whatever I want to create, or from achieving what I want to achieve. But when we start to make that shift towards life is happening through me or as me, this is where now you're taking more, all right, what is it that I want? You know, what is it that I am trying to create? What is it that I desire? What would be good for me? What would feel really good to my soul right now? What is the energy I want to be giving off? What is the feeling I want to have? And then being able to know, see yourself as you're asking yourself those questions, instead of reacting to what life throws at you. Mm. Because when you start to react, that's when you start to get stressed out. That's when you start to feel the overwhelm. And because we do that day in, day out, then eventually we get burnt out, or we destroy our relationships, or we lose opportunities. You see the cycle?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Of course, you seem to be a very grounded, red woman. Who inspires you? Like, what's your daily routine? When you wake up in the morning, what do you do?
Oh, wow. well, I'll say that my routines are definitely what give me the accelerated results in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Every year or so, I tend to get kind of hooked on to different virtual mentors, I call them. I mean, I think everybody loves Oprah. Oprah is a standing mentor for me, where I really respect the journey that she's taken and have looked at a lot of her content. I do a lot of work on my mindset. And so persons like Wayne Dyer, Marilyn Janae, just anyone that can help me to tap into how I think.
Mm-hmm.
Neville Goddard. I would say a lot of persons who have already died.
Yeah.
Earl Nightingale.
Yeah.
Just thought leaders like that.
Mm-hmm.
My morning routine usually looks like waking up and meditating almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I use an app called Insight Timer, and I've been through a couple of them. I've used Calm and a couple of different ones, but I use Insight Timer now pretty consistently, several times a day almost. So I always start off with meditation, usually around 20 minutes, because my mornings tend to be pretty hectic. But I start off with that, what direction do I want to set my mind in? It's very important for me. Mm-hmm. And then usually following that, I might pull an intention card. So the same thing that you read in my bio about me creating a deck of intention cards. So I might pull a card from my deck, which helps me with an inspirational message for the day. Usually there's a picture on each card. So that sometimes also inspires me or puts me in a feel good space. Because, you know, some mornings you just wake up and you're thinking about what you went to bed last night.
So you
just don't wake up feel good. You wake up with all of the problems, right? So I meditate, I pull a card, I will journal, depending on how time allows, but I usually journal about 5 days a week, whether it's in the morning or at night or both. And then I'll be off and then I'll go off. I'll probably do yoga cause I'm not so good at the gym story, but I'll probably do some stretching, like a 10 minute stretch on my mat, and then I'll get myself and my girls ready for school.
Right.
But yeah, that's my morning. And then I have a nighttime routine, which has me disconnecting from devices and separate. I don't have a television in my bedroom. So I separate myself from whatever space that has the TV in it. And then I start to listen to something that I can fall asleep with, because I know for sure that whatever I go to sleep with on my mind is where I'm going to wake up with once I get consciousness in the morning. So I also use my nighttime to wind down in a particular way to kind of help me in the morning. And just to be clear, I was not born doing this stuff, guys. I literally have been training myself and creating these habits. And the reason I'm training myself is because the results I get when I am doing this work is far more satisfying. And it's not even about money necessarily or anything like that, like climbing a success ladder. It's actually about feeling just peace of mind and freedom. Like, I can't take when my head is just going crazy with all the thoughts about all the different problems or all the different challenges that you're faced with. And so I find that these habits that I've now put into my everyday life are helping me access more mental freedom,
which I like ultimately... The mental freedom, but I like that.
Yes, yeah, it ultimately sets you up for everything else, you know?
Yeah, man. It's like Bob Marley said, emancipate yourself from the mental slavery.
Oh, my gosh. You know? So good. Yes.
Yeah. So being a mother, how has that changed? Obviously, you know, you're successful. You're goal-oriented. But being a mother, how was that, you know, that they say is the, no matter what job you do, that is the most important and the hardest job a woman could ever do. But being a mother, how has that changed you?
Boy. Let me tell you something, Adrian. If nothing else has transformed my life and continues to create opportunities for me to step into a higher version of myself, it is mothering. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think that we were tricked with this motherhood thing because it doesn't end. It's not like you become a mom and then when they leave the house, you know, your time's up. No, that's not what happens. Yeah. It continues. Well,
for some it happens for some. But if you choose to be that type of parent or that type of mother, well then yeah. But that's some of them, as soon as you leave my house, they adultize it for you, yes. You know?
Yeah. True. Yeah. True. But yeah, I think what's really fascinating about raising children is how much you evolve as they grow up, or you have the opportunity to evolve as they grow up. Because as you say, not everybody take the opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So when my children were babies and, you know, I would say pre 10, up until about 10 years old, it was all about the logistics of things. You know, a lot of the focus was on getting to places, making sure that you know, they woke up in the mornings and you fed them and just keeping them alive, you know. And so it was very much testing your logistical skills. How organized, how structured are you? How caring are you? And I think during that stage of my kids' life, I was going through so many changes of my own. You know, I mean, I got diagnosed with breast cancer when all my children were, I think, 10 and under.
Okay.
And I think the youngest was 2 when I got diagnosed. And so when you think about logistics and even just the simple things of moving kids around while you're trying to do treatment and all this other kind of craziness. It's very challenging. Many people ask me how I did it. And the truth is I don't have like a formula. What I'll say is I just did it. I remember when I got my diagnosis and I came home. At the time I was still married. And I came home from the doctor and I saw my 2-year-old and I was just like, she did not sign up for me to die. You know, so what are we going to do about it? We're going to do everything we can to stay alive, right?
Your mindset stepped in there. That's a different mindset. Yeah.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, and so during that time, I think was really where I had to develop a lot of grit as a woman. You talk about balance and having a lot of different things that you're managing and carrying, and it there are no words to explain what that time frame was like, and the person that I became out of the experience of mothering while battling cancer, and then eventually right after that was separation, you know, and moving to another country because the company I was working with, we actually got bought by a Canadian company, and so they asked the executives of the company to move to Canada with the company, and so I was now dealing with cancer, separating with my 3 kids on my own and moving to a new country where I never know nobody. And so when you talk about grit and resilience, oh my gosh, that's when I think I really developed a level of resilience that has served me till today and will continue to serve me for the rest of my life, you know? And then as I became teenagers, and I started to lean into more spiritual work and more of the mindset work and became a lot more self-aware, I think I kind of took on wanting to be more of a guide than a mother telling you what to do, which is very difficult. You know, it's something that is called conscious parenting. And this is where you're really now wanting to hear your children's voice and allow them to express themselves. And you know how Caribbean parents, you know, we know that. If I tell you what to do, you do it. You don't bother come negotiate and talk back to me, right? And I took a different path. You know, I decided I wanted to take a different approach. And I'm still learning. I think I'm growing because now my son is in university and I have 2 teenage daughters, and then I also have 2 bonus children because my spiritual love partner has 2 kids of his own, and so, you know, I'm now also learning and growing from blending children and blending people, you know, and my kids are a lot like me actually, which is not easy to deal with, I'll tell you. So I have very strong-willed children who want what they want, and they believe in going after, you know, their desires, and so there's a lot of conversations and oh my gosh, a lot of growing and stretching for me, you know.
Of course, folks, if you just joined us, we're talking to Stacy Hines. You know, she's from born in Jamaica, but I would say a woman of the world. We're talking power of a woman, balancing personal life and business success. Well, I must say you're an amazing human being, because reading your bio and, you know, just talking to you, and you just threw me that cancer thing there, because my mom died from cancer about a year ago, right? Adrian. You know, and it was, you just threw me that there, and I was like, what, on top of all this, you know, talking to this woman, and on top of that, you are also a cancer survivor. So kudos to you, you know, that is just a
thank you,
a test to you.
And thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Kudos to you for carrying on the memory of your mom in her passing, you know.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Now, during COVID, how did you battle during COVID? And of course, what you're doing in tech, was it, did it affect your industry and what you did?
Oh my gosh. COVID and me and tech was the best thing I can describe it as, was an explosion. Literally right before the pandemic, And it was actually during the pandemic, I think I got to know Karen Rose, who is also a part of your family
at
106. Right before the pandemic, I was elected to be the president of what would be the Technology Professional Association for Jamaica. Mm-hmm. So I think Trinidad has a computer society. Mm-hmm. I was elected to be the president in February. And of course, in a COVID land March. So it was what I would say an explosion, because while everybody else was losing jobs and staying home and not having anything to do, I think I probably worked the hardest I've ever worked in my life during that 2-year time frame from 2020 to 2022. And that was both because our organization was being looked toward to help people that needed, companies needed help with going digital. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was I actually launched several programs through the society and then also on my own to help people to move their businesses online, especially in the Caribbean. You know that people we're just easy going, right? Easy as it goes, unless you have to do something you don't. And then so many people were losing jobs and money and livelihoods when the pandemic came. So I ended up, most of my time was working, a lot of it, and probably working too much, definitely inside. But it was good to be in Jamaica during the pandemic. I traveled quite a bit before, definitely back and forth between Atlanta, which is where I spent most of my adult life in the U.S., and then it's like, right before the pandemic hit, I had just flown back from doing some work in New York and at Tennessee and Atlanta. I had gone on like this mini tour. And to be locked down, I think that was one of the things that I really missed, was just traveling and going to different places. Mm-hmm. But I was working constantly. And it was good to see the impact. Like there was this one boot camp that I did that was to help businesses move from offline to online in 6 to 8 weeks, I think it was. And I actually had a couple of entrepreneurs from Trinidad sign up for that, because it wasn't, it's virtual. So, and it was really great just see how these companies felt like they had hope. The owners of these companies felt like they had hope and that their small business was able to survive. And it was a partnership between myself and MasterCard, and we brought on just a whole bunch of experts to come and talk about the different things you can do to help yourself with going digital. And it was very successful, if I must say so myself, and something that I've seen replicated since this boot camp back in 2020. So from a work perspective, I would say I was definitely overworking. For sure. One of the things that I think that was really great that came out of the pandemic too, though, is, I have a podcast called The Balanced Lady Boss Show.
Right.
And I doubled down on my podcast, because I felt like people wanted to hear conversations about just finding bliss and resolving issues. I mean, for many women, they lost work or they had to give up work to be home, take care of the kids so that the husband could keep working or the man could keep working if they weren't married. Many of them, had challenges with being at home and me having to make that sacrifice and not knowing how to manage the headspace when all of that is happening. Many relationships were falling apart because persons are so used to passing each other like ships in the night.
Yep.
They don't have to face each other.
Yeah.
So then here we go now, boom, pandemic drop, and you have to face each other.
Yeah. Right? Some parents actually got to know what their children gave to their teachers at school.
Yes, they actually got to see. So you had all of those revelations happening, right?
Yeah.
And even for me as a parent, I saw how much I didn't want my daughter in the school that she was in, and how difficult it was for the teachers, to be trying to manage classrooms with 40, 50 kids, create connection and learning, so it was like a deep learning period. It's almost like all of us were trapped in this test tube where we just had to get all of this learning. And I certainly took a lot of those things and took from the lessons from the podcast. And that's what one of the things that launched one of my products now, which is Fempowered, where I just realized how much help women needed. So not that the men don't need help. I have something coming up for the guys too. Mm. But that the woman, you know, our minds work differently. Whereas I'll be talking to Adrian and, you know, I would say, Adrian, go do something. And you're going to be like, all right, and you're going to do it. And you come back and say, Stacey, this workout never work. With a woman, you tend to say, okay, go do this. They're going to analyze it 5 ways till Sunday. Think about all the possible things that could go wrong with it, you know, seek advice from them friends and family, you know, and then come back to you 3 times before them decide to actually do it. So our minds just work differently. So we need different support, right? And I really saw that cry for support coming out of the pandemic. And so it just made me double down on providing solutions to help women support themselves and everybody else in their lives better. Yeah.
Now, digital transformation, which is, you know, major factor that we keep hearing about this digital transformation here in the Caribbean, and the government wants to lean to digital transformation. Exactly what is digital transformation, for those who don't know?
Right. So the way I like to describe digital transformation is very simply utilizing technology and digital tools to help you to do things better. Mm-hmm. And those things can be for yourself or it can be for other people. And I know that it's a very simplified definition, but the reason it's as simple for me is because we've been actually going through digital transformation since I can remember. It's just that it's looked different. Basically, companies, when they had to move towards using Microsoft, if I don't know how old you are, Adrian, you look like a young man, but back in 2000, you know, when I used to do training for Microsoft, we were helping people get on Windows 95, and that was a big digital transformation. You know, lots of companies were not using Windows or anything like that. They were still using computers that had green screen. You type in and the words are green and the background is black. Mm. You know, so for me, digital transformation is just getting better and better at using technology to do the things that you want to do in a better way. And what's happening now, though, is the tech is so advanced, right? It's become a big talking point because a lot of the manual processes and things that are still surviving the ongoing transformation that's been taking place. A lot of the manual processes are preventing businesses from stepping up to a point where they'll survive. Yeah. So you have so many new businesses coming in and using technology better than the existing ones. It's causing us a major challenge for industries across the world. Mm-hmm. So government, as an example, you know, government is very manual. You know, they have to serve countries, and countries need governments to be able to serve them in a way that will enable them to have strong economic fortitude. And when a government can't do that, it makes it very difficult for the country to do well. So if we go back to the definition and using technology and digital tools to help you to do things better for yourself and for others, when you accelerate that 10 times now and you say, okay, if I don't actually move my business towards being able to do things better myself or for others, then another company is going to come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my company might die. Right. Or in the case of government, if I don't enable my society through digital, then my society is going to fall into the bottom, into, you know, how they would label first world, second world, third world. I think that's what's going to happen with the digital transformation for governments, is that your country will just no longer be considered first world or second world, or it will become further down that third yeah, world.
Right now we're like 10th.
Yeah, we're far. We have a ways to go, and it's an opportunity. Here, why it's an opportunity, Adrian, because tech is exponential. Right, we saw how in November ChatGPT launched publicly, because it had been, there had been some AI work around before, but hey, here we come, public launch, and everybody's just running around like, you know, oh my God, the bots are coming, you know, I don't know what to do with this, how is it, is it taking over, like, what, you know, there's a lot of fear, yeah, right? It's just an indication that we have an opportunity to leverage something like that and leapfrog the changes. We no longer have to go through, it's not like we're 20 years behind and we have to go through all of the 20 years of change to get ahead. No, at 2023, the technology is so evolved that you can literally make the investment and lift and shift your organization to a new way of existing using technology. But the biggest piece that is required to enable that leapfrogging and enable this acceleration of companies that are thinking doom and gloom, oh my gosh, I can't catch up with digital transformation, is the mindset. Like, literally, when all of the projects that I consult on, the majority of the work that I do with companies is about their people and helping their leadership to think about change and transformation, and where people are not willing to change and they need to work them way out of the company so that the company can evolve. But in the Caribbean, I don't find that we're willing to do that very well. We're not willing to say to a group of leaders, you know, it's transform or leave. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd rather have persons who have been with the company for 20 years and feel that their way is better because of fear.
Yeah.
We'd rather, you know, tiptoe around that, and then it just holds the entire transformation program back. And when you look at big companies like McKinsey reporting that only 30%, approximately 30% of digital transformation initiatives are successful, it helps you to understand that it don't have nothing to do with tech. It's not the tech. It's the people and their mindset. And this is globally that McKinsey is talking about, right? So you have countries that are way further ahead, and companies inside of those countries are struggling because that they do not have that mental resilience that is required to navigate the change because of fear. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. How important is you know, we've been talking a lot about crime. I know there's crime in Jamaica, there's crime all over the world, but here in Trinidad and Tobago, The number one topic is crime. But how important is this digital transformation in the fight of crime? Like, I love these FBI shows, and I don't know if you know the FBI series where you could zoom in, they get a license plate, they just type it in, and they could see who owns the car, vehicle, they could see where the person lives, and all the information, they know to go directly to where the person is, and bam, they could catch a poop. But, you know, digital transformation in the fight against crime, how important is that to be implemented?
Oh my gosh, it's so critical, like extraordinarily critical. Mm. You know, we have so much available to us if we're able to use tech to support solving crime. And I see a lot of opportunity for it everywhere I go, in Jamaica for sure.
Yeah.
And I wonder what is it going to take for us to really showcase that there's technology available. And it's not that it's hard to get either, right? Simple things like cameras and the way we think about monitoring, right? So in the UK, for instance, you know, there's cameras everywhere, CCTV is everywhere. Do we want to have that kind of experience in the Caribbean? Maybe not. However, I do think that there are many things that organizations can do, crime fighting organizations can do, to support utilizing something as simple as camera technology, video recording technology, to fine tune how we manage our issues, you know, our crime issues. And there are transformations taking place, I believe, in certain organizations. I mean, here we actually have a conference that is coming up with our constabulary force, our police force, where they're talking about the different transformations that they're exploring as it relates to, you know, crime investigation, managing crime, etc. And I would like to see more of that kind of collaboration work being done. I know that we tend to reach out to countries that have, you know, really done well in certain areas and on board those insights. Estonia is one of those that persons consistently look towards for digital transformation inside Singapore and other places like Netherlands, where, you know, where they're just further along in their journey. And I would love to see in the Caribbean, just in our region, more collaboration around things like crime and how we can leverage technology to support how we fight crime. You know, I think there is definitely opportunity there and much more that can be done. And the video capture technology is just one of those things that I think is kind of low hanging fruit, you know?
Yeah, yeah, of course. Of course, all the places you've worked all over the different parts of the States, Canada and Jamaica. But where's your favorite place to have worked or to have settled?
Oh gosh. What I would say, if I'm to design my favorite place, it would be a combination of the Jamaican experience and it would actually be all three. I'll tell you why. In Canada, I really enjoyed the access to farm fresh food and just natural living. Yeah. One of the things that I did when I was treating my cancer was I went liquid vegan, and I was following a very strict kind of vegan diet for a little while. And so I was living in Canada at the time, and it was just great to wait for the berry season to come so I could just harvest blueberries and just use them in my shakes and my everything, right? And there was just grains available. You could buy things by the pound, and you know, the markets were nice, and you know, I really loved that kind of perspective. And I also loved how clean Canada was. It was almost too sterile, if you ask me, but I love the discipline and the cleanliness of that place. The US now, I think the access, you know, the access that you get, ease of getting, you know, getting everything at your fingertips, I really miss that when I'm in the Caribbean. I miss that ease of access when I'm here. If you buy a house, you know, it's easy for you to furnish that house. You buy a house here, you're thought, well, you can fly in this and import that. You know, it's just those kind of challenges. Right. And then, of course, in the Caribbean, you just can't, one, you can't beat the weather. I'm a nature lover, so I love to see the trees and the mountains and, you know, all the blossoms and all that kind of stuff. And I just think we have a vibe. You know, our people have a nice vibe, and I don't think you can find that vibe anywhere else other than in the Caribbean, right? Yeah. So I would blend up all of those things. What I would say to persons who are probably thinking about, you know, migrate and so forth, everything is for a time, you know, it's all seasonal. So there was a season in my life where I needed to be in Canada, right? And I was there for that season and it worked. And then it got to a place where I could no longer be there because the season was over and I could feel myself being pulled elsewhere. This season of my life is for Jamaica, right? And I'm having that experience and I'm already feeling the pull for the next thing, you know? So I'm excited to have access to all these different places. And that's another thing that I would share, Adrian, is just that you can live and create anywhere. You just have to decide that you're going to do that. And once you make that decision, then you'll start to see things falling in line to help you to create that lifestyle that you want. But most times people come up with all the different excuses. Oh, I can't leave because, oh, I can't. There's, you know, we can do anything we want. We can create anything we want. We just have to be willing to accept the things that come along with it.
The mindset, the mindset. So tell us, where can people, I see you have e-books. Tell us, where can we purchase your ebooks or view any of your leadership? I mean, I think you're somebody who could really transform, you know, a lot of lives. Here, people hearing your story. Do you have any YouTube videos? Yeah. Can people go up there and listen to you speak?
Yeah, for sure. I'm on all channels, guys. You can find me everywhere. On YouTube, I am Stacey Hines. You just Google Stacey Hines, StaceyHines, Stacey Hines Jamaica, and you'll definitely find me. I have my own channel, and I've also done a lot of interviews with other people, so you'll be able to see those there. On Instagram, I'm Stacey Hines again. I am Stacey Hines, and that page gives you links to where you can. You can definitely DM me, and you can also, you know, choose to download some of my freebies. And then on LinkedIn is where I put a lot of my professional content around women's leadership, leadership development, digital transformation. I have all of those conversations on LinkedIn. And again, it's Stacey Hines. Just look up Stacey Hines, look up Stacey Hines Jamaica, Stacey Hines Atlanta, and you'll find me. And I'm looking forward to coming to Trinidad. It's on my list. One of my friends, Terry, I saw Terry's tour when she was doing her book launch, and I was like, yes, Terry, inspire me to go to Trinidad. I'm really looking forward to coming and maybe doing some workshops there, either on entrepreneurship and doing business digitally, or on leadership with women, or both, whatever. You know, I'm really looking forward to coming to Trinidad and spending some time.
Yes,
some
so we're looking there. Forward to, you know, hearing you as well too. Stacey Hines, has been beautiful talking to you, and you know, all the best to you and your family. All right, and keep that mindset.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. Thank you very much. All right.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.